G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Good morning, Whitey.
Very good morning to you. The hot air balloons are out, which means
that
there's not a lot of wind around. It's not going to be as hot as it was yesterday, so it's perfect. Really should be playing golf in these conditions.
Well, you're too busy. You're too busy for anything at the moment. You're almost too busy for life at the moment.
You're right.
You're the world's busiest man.
How did I get to this point?
Never met a bloke who has more meetings and meets about meetings.
Like, how did I get to this point?
It's quite remarkable what you're doing. So no golf for you, no hot air ballooning for you. Just chatting on the wireless with us for the next 2.5 and then see what you can do with more meetings.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Hey, there's a bit to talk about this morning. Some interesting things. Where would you like to start? Because usually I just start off and far away. But where would you like to start this morning?
Well, no, I think we owe the sporting world a conversation about Diego Maradona early doors. We'll try and track down a bit more expertise in the field through the morning. But I think the passing of Diego Maradona is a significant passing in the world of sport. Do you not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I heard you in your opener talk about the impact of him on your life and as a sort of a young person growing up. We're obviously the same age. But I think growing up sort of as a teenager particularly, maybe sort of even a little bit earlier than that, he was a genuine world superstar.
Yes.
And I think in a lot of ways, he was almost the number one. I mean, there was the folklore around the hand of God and what happened in that World Cup. And I remember him coming out to Australia to play against the Socceroos. I think it was at the Sydney Football Stadium. And it was just such a big deal that an international superstar was coming out. Now, as the world has got smaller, whether that be through being able to watch a sport through television or just the fact that international athletes come a lot more, I just remember it being a massive thing.
Yeah.
When he came.
100%. He was the first real global superstar I reckon I can remember.
Yep, I agree with that.
Full stop. And then when he came to Australia, my goodness gracious me, you've got this bloke, this little master, what do they call him? They used to call him like the perfect number 10 or something. The way he played, he was like the perfect number 10. And then in position up forward there for all his clubs. Now, Boca Juniors, of course, was one of the famed ones, but it was his performances in the World Cup where we, as I think international visitors and watchers of the game, where we knew him from and learned the legends of Diego Maradona. And that World Cup, 86 World Cup, where they won, and his performance in that whole series, and you mentioned the hand of God there, which still is folklore in the world of sport, isn't it, the hand of God? But the goal stood, and they won. He had a second goal as well, 4 minutes after the hand of God, which people forget about. But he was the man on the planet. He was on the biggest sport on the planet. He was the biggest star. So I think his influence on the game and the legacy that he left as a player, and we talk about role models and inspirations and reasons why people do things and people play sports. And I mentioned Mark Waugh before. Like, Mark Waugh is one of the reasons I love playing cricket, because I wanted to try and emulate the way he batted. Very difficult to do, of course, but I wanted to be like Mark Waugh. Diego Maradona was that for a global population of soccer kids.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that nowadays, and I still firmly believe a lot of it's because of things like PlayStation and Xbox and these sorts of things, is that both soccer and basketball, the kids want to emulate the players based on what happens on Xbox and PlayStation. They know all the international stars because of that. Whereas growing up in the schoolyard, if you did play soccer at primary school or at secondary school, he was that one player where you'd actually want to be. You know, you try and be, oh, I'll be Maradona sort of thing, as opposed to an Australian soccer player. And that was kind of, I think, a lot rarer back in that time. It was almost like sacrilegious to be able to, you want to be someone from another country. But he was that sort of, he was that person. And you know, now we've got Ronaldo and we've got, you know, probably Beckham through the late 90s and the 2000s and, you know, Messi, these sorts of guys. But I think it was Pelé initially, and then it was Maradona were the two that I would think. Now, soccer is not my number one sport, but you just knew Maradona. That's just it. And it was Maradona. It wasn't Diego Maradona. It was Maradona.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, sure.
And when I was 6 or 7, it was probably, it was probably Madonna. you get the
couldn't say his name.
Yeah,
no, it's a significant passing in the world of sport. We're going to try and track down some more learned voices on his career and his impact than ours. Although, I'll go over it again. He was the first global superstar that I sort of knew at school days. And you talk about playing in the schoolyard. I remember being Maradona in the schoolyard. Because I got to pick first and I wasn't being anyone else because there was no one else I wanted to be.
Yep, absolutely.
And certainly not in Australia. We weren't playing World Cups in 86 and not 90 and 82 and those years. So you didn't want to be anyone else. You wanted to be Maradona because he was the man. He was the man. So a very sad day for the world of sport with the passing of Diego Maradona at the age of 60 through a heart attack.
He had a colourful life. He lived it to its fullest.
Yeah, correct. Yes. He seemingly made the most of opportunities, good or bad. So he certainly had some challenges through the last couple of decades, no doubt. Which, I don't know, for those that love him and that adore the game, whether or not that's tarnished his legacy or not, it'd be interesting to see how they see it. Let us know, 0416 90 50 52.
A lot of the greatest athletes do have a troubled or challenging life off the pitch. In a lot of ways, and not just off the pitch, but off the arena, off the whatever, off the tennis court, it kind of is part of their makeup in a lot of ways.
Yep.
It's just now whether that's because of the fame that comes with being the best and all those sorts of things, I'm not sure. But often. The ones that perform so well on the field have got this flair, this something extra, this X factor that we often talk about, that it just means that there's a lot that comes with that as well off the arena, away from the spotlight, which means sometimes the spotlight becomes what happens off the ground.
No,
You know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean. And you're right. There's seemingly something different about a lot of the greats and their makeup and how they cope. So we'll try and track down someone with more expertise on it to give us the impact of the passing of Diego Maradona. Where else, Whitey? What's next on your agenda?
I think I don't want to because it's late November, but I do want to talk about, I think, a significant AFL story.
Oh, yeah.
I
know where you're going now.
Yeah, I can't come to terms with the fact that Collingwood and the Bulldogs are still arguing over who will be paying Adam Treloar and how much they will be paying Adam Treloar. In my view, if that hadn't been signed off on and agreed upon before the trade deadline, that trade should not have gone through.
I agree.
And I think it is a major... Now, this is if the reports are true, but if the reports are true and the Dogs and the Magpies have not agreed on the salary breakdown of Adam Treloar, then that is a huge break of trust and a huge issue for me in that trade. I'm trying to think of the right word. I can't think of the right word. But that's not good.
So according to your mate Ralphie in the Herald Sun, who you can hear sometimes with Gareth Hall on RSN 927, Johnny Ralph, The Buzz. The Adam Treloar's move to the Western Bulldogs is still unofficial.
Now, that's not acceptable.
With Collingwood haggling over how much of his bumper contract it is willing to pay. I'm reading off Johnny Ralph's article in the paper today online. It's quite remarkable. I'm with you. I had to read this story twice and read the start of it twice to actually understand what was happening. Because you just assume, and one should never, of course, as my father used to say, you just assume that once the trade has been organised, that all the finer details, particularly about a player in contract, like Adam Treloar, who had such a high profile process to get to that the trade, or seemingly the resulting trade to the Western Bulldogs, you just assume that that is all sorted and everyone knows what's happening. I was staggered that we haven't gotten a resolution as to the breakdown of his salary payments. Now, the Western Bulldogs, according to The Buzz, have said through the process that he won't miss a dollar. He doesn't. He said all along the way, I'm getting what I've been promised. And fair enough, too, if you're getting kicked out 5 years out of your deal, I reckon. And the Bulldogs have said, you will be getting everything as far as we are concerned. But I couldn't believe it. No. How is that allowed to happen?
Well, no, but it shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Where's Ken Wood? Where's our man
Ken?
Well,
I think Ken needs to be getting on the telephone.
Ken's actually finished his work there at the AFL.
Has he?
There's something somebody else these days. I think Ken's gone.
But that can't happen because from a trade perspective, if there are... there might be other AFL clubs out there at the moment going, well, hang on a sec. If I knew I could have extra time to work out the final machinations of that contract, then I would have put my hand up and said, we would have dealt with Treloar. I mean, that part of a trade is that everything has to be, I would have thought, everything has to be agreed upon and signed off on before that trade is made official.
Yep.
Because if it hasn't, then it's not in the spirit of the game. It's not in the spirit of what the trade period is supposed to be.
No, I agree with you. 100%. As I said, I had to read that story twice because I was staggered that it's been allowed from headquarters' perspective. Don't worry about the Bulldogs and Collingwood trying to just buy themselves some more time to sort this out and get this mess sorted. The fact that headquarters have allowed that to be signed off.
Well, that's the thing. You would have got to that hectic final hour on prime time, and the AFL's question should be to both the Bulldogs and the Collingwood. So you've agreed on the salary situation. That's all been signed off on. Okay, yep, fantastic. That trade can go through. You can't have a situation where it's still going now.
No.
Because that's like saying, well, hang on a sec. We wouldn't have minded a little bit of extra time. If you're Essendon or the Bulldogs, you wouldn't have minded a little bit of extra time on the Josh Dunkley situation. Or... there might have been other examples of trades that were looked at that, now Collingwood could have gone, oh yeah, well, maybe we could have had another look at Jack Gunston or, I don't know. I don't like the look of that at all.
Anyway. No, couldn't agree more with you. Couldn't agree more on that front. It's a most unusual setting because effectively what they're saying is the trade period hasn't finished just yet.
That's exactly right. No.
It hasn't finished just yet. So, what the hell is that about?
Well,
I think the headquarters need to make a comment on this. This has got to go straight to the top as to why this has been allowed to happen. We need to hear from the AFL in the back of this.
Well, in my view, he should be going back to Collingwood.
Well, but the trade's gone through. They've ticked off on it from headquarters' perspective. So, if the governing body said you're okay, it's good to go. Well, I don't think that can happen. I don't think that should happen. But this should have been sorted out before it was signed off on and we got to that point. That's I think, our point today. But I think headquarters have got a case to answer here. I don't think footy fans... In fact, we'll get the SMS, 0416 90 50 52. Give us a call, 1300 652 927, with your take on it and whether or not this is passing the pub test for you out there in RSN land. And, of course, it's nice to be able to have access to the pub to get the pub test these
yes.
days.
Yes. Now, I've been called a lot of things in my time. I've just been called a squid.
What?
We're talking about Diego Maradona and other famous athletes that get up to some interesting extracurricular activities. And the text has come through because they are cool, Whitey, unlike you, squid.
Oh, boy.
Squid.
Never been called that before. Been called a lot of things.
Squid or squib is what we're looking for.
Well, I've definitely been called a squib, but not a squid. Anyway,
right, okay. Well,
just came from left field.
I've just refreshed the SMS machine, I must admit, and there it is. There it is.
There it is.
It's squid.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Okay, right.
Off the SMS, while we're there, could this be part of the reason that the Goey has yet to sign? Well, possibly, but that, again, if that's the case, that's unacceptable. None of this is acceptable. As far as I'm concerned. Send him back, says another one. And then another one coming because it's Ed and he thinks he's allowed to do what he wants. Well, I think this is more than Ed. This is beyond Ed, this one. Mm. He's under a fair bit of heat at the moment, the Edster. But I think this is beyond Ed, this one. But it does not pass the pub test. And it shouldn't have been allowed to happen. I'm with you. John's on the road. Hello, John.
Hey, boys. How are you?
Going well, thank you.
Hang on a second, I'll just back up. Yeah, I think it's unfair too, mate. I wouldn't have minded him at Essendon, and we could have just paid him trips and drabs and a little bit next year and a brown paper bag and all that kind of stuff. On. Eddie, you need to tell us what's going on. I haven't heard from Eddie much lately. And the AFL won't do nothing about it. I'll tell you that now.
Well, I think the interesting thing about what you've just said, John, if we look at it seriously for a moment, so Essendon were trying to get Josh Dunkley, and they couldn't get it done for a variety of different reasons, mainly because the Bulldogs wouldn't do the trade and Essendon wouldn't give up what they needed to give up. That's fine. But if Essendon had the money for Josh Dunkley, you'd think that they would have the money for Adam Treloar. Now, I'm not saying Adam Treloar is the perfect fit for Essendon, but let's just play the game for the moment. Essendon could go, oh, hang on a sec, if they didn't come up with a monetary deal, we could have come up with a deal. But they didn't have the chance to because, oh, we thought that was all done before the deadline.
Yeah. I suggest we stay away from the brown paper bags, Johnny. We get ourselves in trouble with those deals these days. But your point is well made. And your follow-up, Whitey, is a very good one. The Bombers were looking for a midfielder of sorts.
Yeah.
Adam Treloar might have. We've got Ben Rutten coming on later on. We're going to ask him if he would have been a viable option for the Bombers had the option been on the table still. Because they couldn't sort the deal out financially with the Bulldogs and the Magpies. But I'm with you. It was certainly the one that got me thinking last night when I saw the story online that they didn't have the deal done. Like, unacceptable. Oh, I think headquarters are the ones that need to kick in the teeth on this.
Yeah, I agree. I 100% agree.
They've got to have a case to answer, headquarters. They've been very good this year. Considering what's happened, they've had a good year, I reckon, in the AFL. But this is not a nice way to finish the season, I wouldn't have thought.
No,
we'll start the next one.
There's a couple of other things, because today is actually an important day because you get the delisted free agent window sort of thing happening. So I think there will be a few things where players will be picked up by other clubs in this period. It's a lot shorter than what it has been previously. We saw a little bit of movement yesterday where the likes of Grant Birchall and Eddie Betts have gone on to rookie lists, and a lot of this is around list sizes and the change to the TPP for next year. North Melbourne had another player cut. So Ed Vickers-Willis was another one. So that's the 14th player to depart the club, either by a delisting or by a trade situation. That's a lot of players. That is
so 14 out, 4 in at this stage.
Yeah, it's a massive turnover. I mean, that's going to be over a third of the list turned over.
Yeah.
With the dropping in, it's probably going to be right on a third, actually, but with the dropping of the list. The Richmond player, Derek Eglemy-Smith.
Yes.
That surprised me.
So he's been told he won't be offered a contract.
That surprised me a lot. I mean, in a premiership year, he played 8 games, and in a couple of those games, he played extremely well. Very good mover, uses the ball pretty well. You'd have to think that there'd be clubs going, whoa, let's have a look at him.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm with you. I was a bit surprised by that too, considering he was able to play and play quite well in a few games for the Tigers through this compact season of 2020. I was a bit surprised by that too. Paul Wade's been good enough to join us on the morning of the passing of the great Diego Maradona, former captain, of course, of the Socceroos, and played against the man himself, and I'm sure had an impact on his career through the journey. Paul, good morning.
And a very good morning to you too.
Great to have you on board with us on the Breakfast Club.
Thank you.
Former Socceroos skipper. We don't get many of those around here, so we'll absolutely cherish any chance to chat to you. But it is on a sad day for the game, and I'm sure for a lot of players out there, Paul, like you, they've got a chance to play against him and be a part of his world, Diego Maradona. What impact did he have on your career?
Wow, just standing there in the Sydney Football Stadium tunnel next to him, I'm thinking, geez, you're not very big at all. you look really strong to me. That's amazing. But when I actually played against him, he only used his left foot. He didn't give me a touch of the ball. Miserable so-and-so. And it was just amazing. Some of the things he did, I went, wow. And that's not the best Diego Maradona. That was in 86, arguably the best, when he won the World Cup on his own. But you know, no matter where we went, there were 10 deep people around him just wanted an autograph, wanted to be near him, wanted to, I don't know. It was, I don't know what he said or what he thought, but wow, I'm thinking we would never know what it's like to live his life.
Yeah, well, and we were talking about that this morning. It was a colourful life. It would have been one of full of adoration from the entire public because of the way he played and the impact he had on particularly the South American market of football, then the world. Growing up, was he? I know you've played against him, but Ham, what did you know of him in your teenage years?
Well, I first laid eyes on him when he won the 86 World Cup. Well, yeah, not laid eyes on him, but took real notice of him. It's like, how did he do that? And look, we're encouraging kids to kick with both feet. He didn't, and he's the best ever in the world. But, yeah, just if you look at some of the vision of him as a kid, you're thinking, wow. He had it way before everybody else. Juggling was just a little bit of fun. I'm sure he could have had a conversation looking the other way and still juggling that ball. He just that ability to know, he just felt it on it. It was part of his body almost.
Paul, we were talking earlier this morning about that game that he played against the Socceroos at the Sydney, I think it was at the Sydney Football Stadium, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And that whole sort of, the superstar factor of him and the movie star factor almost of him that he came to town and it was such a big moment for Australian sport. Now, I know you're kind of part of that. Can you just take us through that time?
Wow, what a party that was. You know, you always had stories about football close to births and deaths in the newspaper. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it led every news item, every newspaper, and sometimes it hit the front pages, never mind the back. It was one heck of a party. And we didn't mind him being here because for us back in the day, it was, wow, any promotion is good promotion. Watching him train on one of the TV interviews with his boots undone. And we're thinking, hang on a minute, we'd be tripping all over the place. But it didn't worry him at all. Bouncing the ball on his shoulder before a World Cup game. He's popping the ball up off his shoulder. I struggle to keep the ball off the ground on my feet. And he's there using his shoulder. Unbelievable.
And the godlike status that he had with football fans, particularly Argentinian soccer fans, and I imagine, as you said before, don't know what it was like to live his life, but playing with that pressure, Paul, is that the sign of what truly is a great athlete? Because not many could be able to deal with that pressure, I wouldn't think.
I think that's the difference with all footballers. We've all got great skills. We can all juggle the ball 1,000 times. We can all pass it 60 yards. But it's dealing with that pressure of expectation. I think that's the difference. And get whatever it is to the normal player in the English Premier League, time it by 1,000, and you might come close to the pressure of expectation that he was under. When we went to Buenos Aires for the second game, because we drew 1-1 here and we lost 1-0 over there. We got beat. We scored an own goal for them. Alec came off the top of Alex Tobin's foot and over the goalkeeper into the back of the net. But I'll never forget, we went to a TV station and me and Raul Blanco, who's Argentinian, but the assistant coach, we're sitting there, we're being interviewed. It was late that night and Maradona rings up and everyone's going, what? Seriously? And yeah, he rang up and they put him to air and he said, congratulations on your performance. It was amazing. You nearly knocked us out of the World Cup. He goes, your tears of joy today will be tears of, your tears of sorrow today will be tears of joy sometime soon. Now, that's a long time between 1993 and 2005. But wow, just to have Maradona unannounced ring up and say that, people are going, that's incredible. So it just shows you how much respect we had from some of the best players in the world. It was an amazing time.
And that night, just came back to the SFS for a little bit. That night when you played Argentina and he came out here and you marked him and you followed him around all night, as you said before. Is it true that you were disappointed at the end of the game that his jersey had been promised to Robbie Slater, but you weren't copying that, so you hung around the dressing room and got something else?
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, I just followed him around for an hour and a half. I wished him a happy birthday in the tunnel before we went out there. I was really nice to him. I wanted that shirt. So I stood there outside their dressing room for ages. I am not leaving. All the boys are in there. We're celebrating because we drew 1-1 with one of the best teams in the world. They were supposed to win the World Cup. I'm standing outside going, nah, I don't care. I want that shirt. And eventually someone brought it out and I went, yes. I tried to rip it off his back for an hour and a half and I got it by some guy coming out of their dressing room.
So where is it?
It's in a container somewhere. My mum's got... I know, right? I use another one. I do speaking gigs all over the country, and I use a shirt that I did pick up in a game in the year before we played Maradona. That if I lose that, you can imagine, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You'd be in real trouble.
Indeed.
So going through, Paul, just to sort of add a bit of perspective on how good he was. You're much more qualified to talk about this than us. Yeah, how good is he? I mean, is he the number one? Is he the number inside the top five? It's always hard to rank them. How good was he? And how much of it is just the superstar factor about his entire package, not just what he did on the football field, that makes him so famous, I guess?
Yeah, everybody will argue about that. I mean, the media coverage about Lionel Messi, everybody's saying that he's the greatest player ever to play the game. Is it Maradona, where the coverage wasn't quite, but still better than Pelé? So was he the best? And if you think about, some people are comparing them. Well, Maradona almost won the World Cup on his own in 1986. Pelé won World Cup after World Cup. Lionel Messi hasn't done it. So maybe that might be. I don't agree, but people are saying, how do we separate them? But when it comes to Maradona, I don't know. He didn't have to look at the ball. And most players at the highest level don't nowadays. But he had something very special. He could be looking the other way and still juggling the ball on his left foot. It was just, wow. You just dream of getting anywhere near a skill level like that. But the vision as well. We got kids who can juggle the ball 1,000 times, but can they pass it in the right place at the right time? And that was a bit special.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great insight. That's a great insight. And on the pitch, did he talk much? Was he someone that was like a good communicative teammate, or was it sort of like, nah, just leave it to me. I'll get the job done, boys. What was it like there from that perspective?
Yeah, look, he wasn't an island. He didn't just play on his own. He played a lot of passes for other people to score goals, but didn't speak a word of English. In fact, probably said very few words in Argentinian, because they play in front of crowds of 80,000 people every week, and the noise is incredible. They can't shout, "Hey, Johnny, look out, there's a guy behind you." And it's not going to work. So it's all eye contact. It's all body language. It's all what they've practiced, the training for the week beforehand. And then you just give him the license to pick any pass, any time. But didn't speak a word of English, but why would you?
Just over a month ago, the Richmond Football Club went back-to-back. Took it 3 in 4 years, if you don't mind, in the world of AFL Premiership. It's rained like few others of recent times. And Jack Riewoldt's a big part of that. And he joins us on The Breakfast Club. Jack, great to have you. Welcome.
Hello, boys. How are we?
Well, we're going very well. We're going very well. Have you absorbed everything that's happened in the last month? Have you sat back and thought about it?
A little bit of reflection. But it's, I've just been enjoying some non-football time, really. It's been a fairly long season, but been able to get back to Tassie for a little bit, and now I'm back in Victoria. But certainly, it's obviously, it's been an amazing journey the last 4 years, and hopefully one that can continue on for a little bit longer for us all.
You've talked about your family a lot through this year in different conversations about different aspects of 2020 and COVID life and hubs and footy and not being able to get access to them. Getting back to Tassie, how important was that to you once the season had finished?
We were very lucky that the borders opened up from Queensland to Hobart without the quarantining sort of 2 days post the grand final. So we sort of hung around to the Wednesday post the Saturday granny and then went down there. It was just good to take Poppy home and to see my grandparents and my wife's grandparents and spend some time down there with both of our sets of parents as well. We've been fortunate that we've seen them a little bit. We saw Carly's parents came up for the footy, and And my parents were there through the quarantining period just to help out a little bit with Carly whilst I was away. So we've caught a few little glimpses of them, but then to spend some quality time with them down home. And our friends and family that are still down in Hobart was pretty special. So we were very lucky to do that. And we know that, we probably won't be down there for a while. Got another little bub due late December. So it's probably the last time we'll be down in Tassie for a few months. So we really enjoyed the 3 weeks that we had down there.
Yeah, great. And what do you plan to do throughout this off-season? Obviously getting ready for bubbas would be one of those things. But with such a weird year and such a fast-tracked year in many respects once you got back playing in the second wave. What are you going to do in the off-season?
Been training a little bit already, just trying to get up and do something most days, so either running or been going for a few rides as well and just riding the bike. So I think it's funny because it's sort of, as much as people harp on about, oh, I'd love to have January start back and AFL players talk about, oh, I'll come back to pre-season January, it's a little bit of a scary one because you really are coming into, say, early January. You haven't been in the club for a while. There's a sort of trip hazard there to come back underprepared. And really you've only got sort of 6 to 7 weeks to get ready for the start of the season. So, I'm just sort of planning to get myself in good shape so that I can attack next year at what is hopefully a year that isn't impeded by any of the COVID situations and start off well. So there's a few things I'm focusing on. So the training and obviously getting ready for bub number two.
I know that most of us, Jack, listening to this interview, are mentally tired with all the unknown of this year, and I guess that's been magnified with what you guys went through. How are you? Are you more physically or mentally tired?
To be honest, Whitey, I'm actually feeling pretty good. I made a real point post the game, sort of got back to as many messages as I could, but once I went to Tassie, I was sort of half turned my phone off really and just sort of replied to the things that I needed to reply to, and then everything else I sort of just put on the back burner a little bit just to give myself that time to refresh and get away from footy. So now that I'm back in Melbourne, I've just been making sure that I'm getting back into normal life and sort of recouping all that time I lost and all those jobs I've put off. So now I'm feeling good, and I mean the weather's great at the moment, so that's certainly making me feel a lot better too, getting out and about.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you, sort of looking back on it now, because it's been a month, can you kind of believe what happened this year?
No, I don't think so. And you look at some of the reports post the end of the season, like the AFL's was staring down the barrel of a $1 billion loss and have come out of it, I say, relatively unscathed. They've still lost $100 million. But in terms of the grand scheme of things, like it's been an amazingly successful year, and what's been financially probably the most trying year in AFL history, if not economic Australian history. So, I think everyone's done a lot of hard work to get where we are as an industry. And, the effects aren't going to be felt as dramatically as they were looking like they were going to be felt. So, I think the game's in a pretty good space, and I'm just wrapped for everyone that is involved in the industry. Like, we've lost some good people, but we've been able to maintain a lot more than what we possibly could have been in a worse situation.
It's a really nice situation to look back now and say, I've got three premierships. But I think particularly this one, because it is so unique, and hopefully there's none like it ever again, does that make it more special, or does it just make it different?
There's that aspect of it. The things that I like attaching myself to this year is that, like Richmond, we've probably always been questioned, oh, we've had a favourable draw and we play a lot of footy at the MCG and we play in front of big crowds and we don't travel a lot. Whereas this year, all that went out the window and we lived away from home. We played at grounds that we might play once every 2 years or maybe once a year, and and we still were able to do it. So I reckon that sort of just overcoming that adversity is the thing I'm most proud about our group. So there's certainly it's a year that will hopefully, as you said, never be redone, and we won't have to relive the journey that we've lived this year. But it's certainly, out of the three for mine, the most satisfying premiership that I've been involved in.
Yeah, I remember hearing Damien Hardwick speak post-grand final, it was, in fact, the next day, the Sunday, Jack, about the whole year and the way it was broken up, and that had the Hubs not happened, that he thought it would have been almost impossible for you to win the premiership, because you were pulled apart with the COVID protocols and the first part of the year with training in small groups and that sort of stuff. And it wasn't the connectedness that you've had at Richmond, and it started to affect things. Do you think that's, from your perspective, that's right, that had the Hubs not been involved and you hadn't spent so much time together, that it would have been almost impossible to achieve what you did?
I sort of forecasting a little bit there, half long, in terms of, like, it's a bit of the unknown, really. But
yeah,
I think the Hub situation really suited us and really helped us play good football. But also there's some guys in every club, and we're no different to that really struggle with the Hub environment. So it's certainly not a one-size-fits-all model to go forward with. Ultimately, though, I think the Hub setup that we had, and we were very fortunate that we went into what was considered the interim hotel for sides, and we really liked where we were. We were a little bit away from everyone else. We had our own hotel, we had our own gym there, and just a little ground to do some small training sessions on. It sort of really suited us, and we sort of attached ourselves to that place and became a beacon for us, really, and a mecca in the end, and we loved it. And I think we were very fortunate to come across that, but we're also, I think, brave as well to make the decision to stay at a smaller hotel and probably give up a few luxuries to have our own environment.
Kyle Adnam, I've got a lot of love and affection for him. He's the captain of South East Melbourne Phoenix. You talk about good teams, White, in teams who are flag favourites. Well, I don't know if they're flag favourites just yet for the NBL for next year, but, gee, they've got some heavy hitters behind them. And the skipper joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Kyle.
Morning, boys. How are you?
We're going all right, thank you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Now, I don't know if you're flag favourites yet. I haven't checked the markets, but when you've got the sort of backing that the South East Melbourne Phoenix have got and continued to get yesterday with the announcement that NBA superstar John Wall has joined the ownership group, you must be pretty positive about the future for the Phoenix.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we had a game of 5-on-5 of ownership, I think we'd definitely get the victory. We got some really good talent in our ownership groups. I think they could join us on the floor too at Melbourne Arena, and we'd definitely be flag favourites.
Yeah, we passed NBA star Zach Randolph, Josh Childress, Al Harrington, of course, Dante Exum's involved in as well. He's a 5-time All-star for the Wizards, John Wall. And I remember playing the NBA Xbox games for years with my son, and he would always be John Wall. He'd be the Washington Wizards, and he'd be John Wall because he was that good. Do you watch him play?
Yeah, I have. He was actually drafted, I think, around the time I was sort of starting my career, and someone I always looked up to, his pace with the ball. He's just a phenomenal talent, and to have someone like that with such experience, obviously in the business side of the sport as well. He understands the game really well. He understands players and different chemistry and dynamic and the operations. So, yeah, it's amazing. And as you mentioned, just a phenomenal player. And I think he's also going to be a phenomenal owner as well. So everyone at the club's so excited. All the boys are chit-chatting about it. And yeah, we're super excited.
So how did it happen?
So our owner, Romy, he's American, and he's got lots of contacts throughout the NBA. And I think, obviously, the NBL is going so well, and Southeast Melbourne being a new, franchise, I think it's more a business opportunity for a lot of people. And to get in business in something you're really passionate about, I think it's, these guys overseas, the NBA guys, their eyes are lighting up at these opportunities. And with the potential growth here in the southeast as well, I think it's, not only, as I said, a great passion project, but a really good business move for a lot of these guys.
And how's it going? You know, obviously, you've got a really long pre-season for obvious reasons, but you're sort of getting yourselves back into gear now. The new season isn't too far away from starting. How's it feeling amongst the group?
Yeah, really positive. As you mentioned, it's been a long pre-season. It's definitely been a little bit of a slog, but it's been absolutely amazing. We were really lucky to be able to train throughout different areas of and different times of COVID. Obviously, we had some restrictions as well, but to have that luxury, that was absolutely incredible. We've been going for probably 5 months now, 4 or 5 months, and I think one thing, it's everyone's in the best shape they've ever been in, so it's going to be absolutely awesome once the season tips off.
Kyle, how have you found it? Gee, 5 months, that is a long pre-season. I'm thinking back to pre-season. If I was out on the track for 8 weeks, I'd be hurting, but it's nice. Everyone will be in good shape. But how have you found the new franchise, setting it up and just trying to build that culture and, you know, trying to get the team together? It's not easy setting up, you know, new teams and franchises.
Yeah, it definitely isn't. And obviously you mentioned culture there. I guess it's something that so many people are trying to put their finger on. And in sport, if you tend to have that little words surrounding you that you've got good culture, you tend to be in a really good position on the ladder and how you're performing. So I think if everyone knew exactly how to do it, we'd all just be searching for that one way to do it. But we've just started out by getting really good people. I think from the front office down, they've done an unbelievable job of sort of targeting people that we want to bring around the club and personalities and how we want to be seen in the community. And things like that, and I think we've done a great job of that. So, you know, when it comes to delegation or holding others accountable, it comes easy for us. And I think that's a great way to really drive your culture and start to build, you know, such a startup club.
Ben Rutten is getting ready to take over the reins as the senior coach of the Essendon Football Club for season 2021. And this, I believe, is his first radio interview before that fact. So we are very pleased about that. The coach of the Bombers joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Rats.
G'day, Harps, Whitey and John.
We're going very well, mate. Great to have you with us. Now, the last time I saw you, Ben, was last week in a moving van, an Essendon Club Football Club moving van. What were you doing, man?
Yeah, the first paycheck hasn't rolled in yet. I had to get on the tools myself and
You're moving house?
Yeah, no, moving house, mate. So I've had to move a few things in the storage. So I thought I'd get amongst it and do a bit of it myself.
If I was a regular footy fan, I would have whipped my phone out and taken a photo of the coach in the Bombers van just for something to do. It would have been a great photo, Rats, but I didn't do that to you.
If I was driving around with the mask on half, I didn't want to be recognised.
Hey, how's your world at the moment, Rats? Is your head spinning or are you fully in control of what this preparation phase for the Bombers for next season looks like?
Yeah, now, it's been a pretty busy period during the off-season, but something that's been, really, really enjoyed. We've got obviously just coming out of the trade period and now moving into the draft, and we've got our first of 5 year players back next week. It's a really busy time for footy clubs, and especially given the circumstances with the reduced list size and all that. There's a fair bit going on, but something I've really enjoyed, and got some great support there at the club.
Well, we know that you've been floating around the traps there at the Bombers for a little while now, but this is your first crack to take the reins fully. Is there an air of pressure being eased on the back of that, or is there more pressure? Because it's been a conversation through the last couple of years of you and John and how it was going to work. Now it's all yours. Is that an easier thing to deal with now?
Yeah, no, look, I think last year I was involved in the succession or the transition period, and it was a unique opportunity that not a lot of senior coaches, you know, get the opportunity to do. So that's something I've been grateful for John. I've got a lot of respect for John, and the responsibility and the empowerment that he gave me last year as an assistant coach. But, I'm really excited to take over in my own right now and, to have that responsibility to be the senior coach moving forward. And, it's important, I think, that, that I'll get marked as a senior coach from now moving forward. And Really looking forward to catching my first game in March.
And Ben, what's the first job on the list? We've got a lot of Essendon fans on the RSN end station. So what can they expect? What's the sort of brand of footy that you guys are going to be carrying on into the next season?
Yeah, look, ultimately, I'm really keen for us to establish a really strong brand of footy that's going to hold up in finals, ultimately. And I think we've seen in the past that, yeah, really strong defensive teams and really strong teams that are in the contest are the key to that. And, you know, our guys are really hungry to do that. You know, I've been down the club a fair bit over the last, month or two in particular, and the amount of guys we've got in there training and working hard and building that chemistry during the off-season has been fantastic. And it's probably because a lot of them haven't been able to get away as they typically would in the off-season. It's meant that they've spent a lot more time together, and I think that's going to be a real advantage for us. But ultimately, I want us to build a really strong blue-collar footy team that's, you know, known for really strong hard work and a disciplined footy team. And, one that I'd love our members and supporters to turn up every week knowing what they're going to get from us and being really proud of the style of play that we play. And I think that's an Essendon, you know, that's a deep down, it's the core of who Essendon is. It's a hard-working team and that fight really hard, they're tough in the contest, and they're really dependable. And I think our players are really looking forward to that, and they're really driven to be part of the success of the Essendon Footy Club.
I'm interested, Ben, in what we'll see from Essendon in 2021. How similar will it be to 2020 based on you being in the coach's box as you were, but now as you are the senior coach, how different will it be in 2021? So what's the... I don't know whether you can put a percentage on it, but how would you look at it that way?
Yeah, look, it is a difficult thing, but there's always... I mean, at the end of any season, there's always changes. There's changes with lists and certain personnel within the footy club. Or maybe we've had a little bit more change than other footy clubs, but I think that's something that should bring some real excitement and some real energy. And as I said before, I think our current players, there's a real drive and there's a real ambition about what we can achieve. And we've just finished up a trade period where we've been able to bring in some really quality people, first and foremost, as well as some quality footballers. And, you know, Jai Caldwell out of Essendon, out of the Giants, Peter Wright, both former first-round draft picks, and also Nick Hyden from St Kilda, who's a former Bomber. He had a couple of years at St Kilda, but he's a player as well. I was really keen to bring him to the footy club. He's got great character, and he's a really hard worker, and he's going to add a lot to our footy club. And I think it's great to see that we've got three players that were desperate to come to the Essendon Footy Club, and we're able to get that done. And they're going to strengthen our position and bring a different element to what we've had previously.
Did that give you a lot of confidence, Ben? Because there was a lot of negative things said about the football club based on the players that wanted to leave. And there were questions asked about the culture of the football club that you were part of. The way the trade period played out, did that change your view to give you more confidence, or were you always confident that things weren't as bad as it seemed?
Yeah, look, I was always really confident. I've got a lot of belief in our playing group and what we can do. I think, you know, if we look at the guys who did decide to leave, we had a couple of guys who wanted to get back home. You know, Joey obviously wanted a lifestyle change, and Sadie was the one that was probably was more disappointing and one we probably didn't quite see coming. But and we always want to keep good people and good players at our footy club, and we fight really hard for them. But ultimately, they've made the decision that they want to pursue their footy elsewhere, and ultimately, we want guys who are really committed to the Essendon Footy Club and happy about their environment where they're in. So although we wish all those guys all the best and they've been really strong contributors for our club, I was always really confident in us as a footy club, and to have those three guys bring those guys into the club through the trade period was fantastic. We had to have Josh Dunkley as well, who was really keen to become a Bomber. Put them alongside Shield and Smith and Stringer in recent years. I think this is a really desirable place to be, and I think at the moment. There's some real excitement and anticipation about what we can do moving forward, and I'm certainly going to put high performance front and centre of what we do, and really keen to, you know, to build a really strong footy club as quick as we possibly can.
So you mentioned before, Rats, that we're still in the acquisition phase, done the trade period, but the draft is just around the corner, and the Bombers go in with a pretty solid hand, just by the way, with picks 6, 7, 8 amongst their draft hand this year. I'm interested, just from your perspective, of your involvement in it, because I imagine the footy club wants to give you the best possible chance to start the way that you would like to start. And obviously, keep young talent would be a part of your plan going forward. Do you have a say in what happens from here? And how much involvement do you have in the drafting of what sort of players you want? Or whether or not you want to say, no, trade that for pick one or pick two, and let's get the best kid and just work from there?
Yeah, look, it's a good point, and I think it's you're right in saying. I mean, to have three picks in the top 10 going into this draft is, you know, something I don't think we've seen at Essendon in a long period of time, and
yeah.
Especially this year, given it's the compromised season that our juniors have had, and you know, the Victorian kids haven't had an opportunity to play all season, so to have three picks, you know, in the top 10 gives us a really good opportunity to pick up some high quality players. And we can have probably a little bit more certainty around who we're picking up at that pointy end. But certainly, you know, I'm a member of our list management team and certainly have a strong voice in what we're doing. And I know Adrian and our recruiting team are doing the power of work and have done over the last couple of months. But even now, they've focused all their attention on the draft. You know, and I'm certainly going to have some involvement in who we pick there, you know, and bringing in Bombers is going to be a really strong focus for me. And that's, you know, having really strong character as well as talent. I think that's important that we continue to build that. But yeah, look, I think it's a fantastic hand that we haven't had for a long period of time. And in recent years, we look at what Port were able to do with three top 20 picks in the recently being able to pick Rosie, Butters and Dersmer. I think that's a really good live example of what an injection of youth can do really quickly to your club.
Mark Waugh is part of the Fox Cricket team, which kicks off tomorrow, live and exclusive. The one-day internationals against India as the summer kicks off, 2 p.m. You can watch it on Foxtel or stream on KO. Junior, good morning.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Going very well, thanks. Now, we went straight into selection for the test team. Now, well, the one day is tomorrow, but while we're there, we're just talking about the tone of the conversation with the Bukowski-Burns situation at the moment that selectors are finding themselves in a position to make a decision on. Is it a different tone to previous selection decisions in your eye?
Yeah, it seems to be. Look, I'm like you guys. I was just listening to what you're saying. I'm a bit surprised how there's been so much talk about the importance of who David Warner wants to bat with. Look, it is a factor, but to me, you know, you pick your best player. You know, David Warner bats with whoever's selected. It's, you know, it shouldn't be such a big important talking point as it is. And I don't know whether that's just the media or the guys just answering a simple question, but there has been a lot of push for Joe Burns to be picked because David Warner wants to bat with him, which is not on. I mean, you just pick the best player, the best two opening bats, and I'm sure they, whoever it is, they can work out how to bat with each other. So, yeah, it's a little surprising to me, but if I was selecting, I'd go with Will Pekoski. I think he's just in such great form and strike while the iron's hot. I know the Australia A, India A game's probably going to have a bearing on the selection, but at the moment I would pick him because he's the form player.
Well, Mark, can you give us some insight? You were a selector. Did you ever go and speak to either an opening batsman or potentially an opening bowler to sort of ask them who they would like to team up with to get the best out of themselves, or was it strictly always taken out of their hands?
No, I can't remember ever doing that. I mean, maybe just in general talk, if you're, you know, at an airport or a hotel, you might talk about, you know, certain players in the team and what you think of them if you had enough respect for that senior player to do that. But generally, no, you just, your job as selector is to pick who you think the best players are. But obviously, you know, you need to gel as a team, there's no doubt about that. But you know, as far as batting is concerned, I think the most important thing to focus on is obviously the position, a specialist position, and whether you're in form or not. Obviously, you know, there's a bit of credit with experience and runs beforehand, but you know, it's all about you know, the form rather than who someone wants to bat with.
Well, if Joe Burns is going to open June, do you see Pekowski sliding in down the order, potentially taking Matty Wade or maybe even Travis Head's spot?
Yeah, g'day, hey. So, I think if Pekowski plays, he'll open. That's what I'm thinking, you know, at the moment. I mean, there's a lot of things to play out, but I'd be opening him with David Warner. And I think the number six spot, I think Matthew Wade, I'd give first crack, but I really think that he's going to need to make some runs. You know, when you're a batsman and you're not performing consistently and making a lot of runs, you open the door for discussion about your spot, and that's been the case of Joe Burns and Matthew Wade, who have both got decent records, but, you know, they haven't nailed their spots, I don't think, in the last, you know, 12 to 18 months, and that's why we're talking about these things. So, you know, I think Cameron Green's could be a real factor during the summer at some stage, given his batting and the fact that he can bowl, you know, 10 or 15 overs, you know, at good pace. I think he's going to be a great option, because I think it's one thing we really miss in the Test team is an all-rounder, a batting all-rounder. I know you don't have to have one, but it gives you great balance, especially during the summer if you get flat wickets and you need that extra bowling, or on the other side of the coin, if you think you need to play, you know, an extra batsman, yeah, that can bowl, it definitely helps out and you can leave out a bowler. So it gives you great balance. So we'll see how that plays out. But I think Wade at six and Koski to open initially at the start of the season.
And what about just the whole build-up to this, the summer, but particularly to tomorrow's kick-off of the one-day games against India from 2 p.m, which you can catch, of course, live on Fox Cricket. How difficult has it been for the players? I mean, they're catching up late. They're coming from all over the place. Some have been in quarantine. How difficult is it going to be to be ready for this series?
Yeah, I suppose it's not ideal, but that's just the world we live in at the moment. I mean, the Indian squad's probably been together, obviously, a bit longer than the IPL, they played a lot of cricket there, and then they've been in quarantine here together, whereas the Australians have been separate, haven't they, with the IPL guys coming back into separate hotels and separate training, and then the rest of the squad with themselves. So not ideal, but, you know, they'll be used to it. They'll get together tomorrow. They know each other's faces pretty well. They know, it's not like you're meeting strangers at the cricket ground tomorrow. They're all well aware of each other's personalities and the way they play, so it's a minor factor, but once they get there tomorrow, I think both teams, all the players will be switched on and ready to go.
Is it easier to go from red ball cricket to white ball cricket, or from white ball cricket to red ball cricket? Because we've got the guys that have been playing Shield as their only preparation, and then obviously you've got the IPL guys as well. Is it easy to adjust because that's just what you do now as a professional cricketer?
You know, I think it's not ideal either way, but I think the players are used to it now. The schedule's so jam-packed, and you've got the three formats, T20 one days and tests, so I think the players are used to it. It's just really a mindset, you know, just switching over your mind to, if you're a bowler, where you want to bowl, and if you're a batsman, you know, obviously being a bit more circumspect with the red ball, so it's more of a mindset. I think they adjust pretty well, the players, these days. But I suppose when you're interacting white ball red cricket throughout the season, it's, you know, there are times where players will look for an excuse and say, well, that's pretty tough to adapt, but, you know, most of the players are really good at it these days, and it's not really seen as an excuse either way.
June, there's been a sheer lack of international cricket, so it's sort of a pretty hard thing to get a gauge on who's going to be favourite for this series, but who do you reckon will get the wood over each other leading in?
Well, I think the white ball, you know, we've got the three ODIs and the three T20s, both excellent sides, you know, jam-packed with quality players. So I don't think there's much between the two teams. Rohit Sharma's going to be a huge loss, I think, white ball for India. You know, he's a fantastic player and he plays very well against Australia. So that's going to leave a hole in the white ball games for India. But they have Kohli and Bumrah, who arguably are the best batsmen and the best bowler in the world in white ball format, so that's going to keep them in the hunt. I think Australia will start favourite on home soil, and especially pretty much at full strength now. Steve Smith's back in the ODI team after he didn't play in England with concussion. Our bowling attack is pretty much back to full strength. Adam Zampa's been the big improver, I think, in recent times in white ball format. He's going to play a crucial role in the white ball, so I think it's going to be close. A lot will depend on Kohli, what's he got, 43 ODI centuries. He's a fantastic white ball player. He loves playing Australia, so a lot will depend on his bat. But I just think I'm going to miss Rohit Sharma in here, so Australia should start favourites in the T20s and the ODIs. And the Test Match Series, I think Kohli only playing one test, I think that gives Australia a huge advantage. You know, I really think if Australia play near their best, they'll win the Test Series quite comfortably.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.